Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about a subject that I know so many of you are interested in, and that is career mapping. I have a wonderful guest whose name is Jenny Clark, and we have her on the line, I believe. Jenny, are you in Chicago today?
I'm in Austin, Texas today, but from Chicago.
You're from Chicago, but you're in Austin. Aha. Well, you're a traveling lady, just like I've been. I just got back from California last night, but you just got in from Chicago in Texas just a short time ago. So
yes.
I'm so glad that we're able to get together today. Jenny, you are a woman that is known for being very down to earth and very pragmatic. You
yes.
are a professional. And you feel that one of your gifts in life is empowering other people to know that they can take their lives and make more of whatever it is that they are experiencing now, but what they really want to see for the future. Now, you founded an organization called Talent Optimization Partners.
Yes.
And you've been involved with corporations and various executives. You do speaking all over the country. You're interested in global diversity.
Right.
You have quite an education behind you. You, along with Echo Garrett,
mm-hmm.
who is the editor-in-chief of Atlanta Woman, she's done a tremendous amount of writing for magazines, websites, and books, and all kinds of things. She launched the Orange Duffel Bag Foundation.
Right.
And she likes working with youth. Now, the two of you are so dynamic as women. How is it that you were able to connect and that you decided to collaborate together to publish this book, Career Mapping, and why is it so important
yeah.
to you?
Well, great setup. Thank you so much. Let's see where to start. I think networking is the way that Echo and I came together. I had started writing in 2003 and prepared what I'll call a partial manuscript of about 90 pages. And then I stopped cold one day because I just looked up and said, I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm not a writer. I mean, I was laboring over every word and I thought half of this is going to get ripped apart and let me find somebody who can really help me. And so on the advice of a friend who'd written three books, she introduced me to Echo and it was magic. And Echo lives in Atlanta. I live in Chicago, but we would speak just about every week. She basically interviewed me and extracted so much more information and real-life stories that really brought the contents of the book together. So very fortunate to have her in my corner.
When she became involved with you, did she find that this is something that was so compatible with what she believed? I mean, she's working with young people. You're working with professional adults.
Right.
How did this dovetail?
Well, at the time, when we first met nearly 4 years ago, she was also working on Sam Bracken's book, Orange Duffel Bag. And since that's been published, she's gotten really involved with the children and the foundation associated with his book, which is focusing on foster care and foster children. So she found a real passion, I think, and purpose in that. But at the same time, she came to really have an appreciation for my world of, at the time, executive search and career management, and she looked at her own life and career, having been a freelancer for many, many years and a writer and affiliated with various publications. So I think, you know, it was just a common chemistry. We just kind of saw into each other's values and psyche and were able to be very compatible.
You call yourself a contrarian, and I had to chuckle when I saw that word in big type in your book, and I thought, now, this is a woman after my own heart, because I'm a sort of a maverick myself, and some people would call me a lone wolf, and I've followed a rather eclectic path in my life. And you yourself really do like to do things that are not necessarily going to fit in with others' modalities. Was this something that you were just born with, or did you find that this was something you had to develop? You had to be willing to learn how to cultivate this side of yourself.
Well, you know, I think I was born with some of it, and I think being a very tall, I'm 6'1", African-American woman, I was always different. And so I think there was a part of me that felt like I needed to make myself accessible and similar to other people, and there was a tendency to assimilate. And then as I got older, I thought, I want to continue to be accessible, but I don't need to assimilate. I really just need to be me. I remember sitting in front of my vanity when I was probably 12 years old, and I stared into the mirror, and I thought, who am I? I wondered, you know, and so it was part of a journey that I took that became even more powerful as I got older and after both of my parents passed away. So I've always been on that journey, and I'm willing to sort of buck convention, if you will, to find what has real meaning to me.
Well, I think that is so important because I believe that we, when we're going through this experience of life, have the challenge of being able to face up to the wonderful particulars of our own individuality.
Right.
And so many times we go, well, gee whiz, I should have purple eyes instead of brown eyes. I should do this,
yeah.
I should do that. And I don't know of anybody that doesn't go through that at some time or another, and then all of a sudden you say, no, I really like my brown eyes. I think they're okay. I like cow's eyes, too, that are brown. Yes, mine are okay. You know, it's coming into that acceptance and really appreciation for yourself. I think that, and that's one of the points that you learned for you, but I really liked your dad, what you wrote about your dad. I love the fact that he said to you, don't ever dumb yourself down to be accepted. Holy Joseph, how many times have women dumbed down? How many times have men dumbed down? Because
right.
that's what they're supposed to do. You're never supposed to just say, excuse me, but I really don't think that this is the right thing to do. Or,
sure.
I know better. No, we're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to dumb down.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, boy, oh boy, the societal system so frequently does that. Your dad is to be complimented. I mean, this is really positive. What a wonderful thing for you to be taught.
Well, I even while he was alive and as a teenager, I had profound appreciation for my father. He was quite remarkable. Both of my parents were. But in particular, I think my dad was kind of my guide. And as you saw in the book, he every Sunday morning he would call me, and I found out later that he had taken notes from every conversation and really tracked my career and guided me and mentored me. And he had been a prison warden. So...
Whoa.
He was a CEO in his own realm, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was just remarkable. He was tough but kind and compassionate and thoughtful and a you know kind of a man of few words at times, but just people were attracted to him. He was very much like a magnet just because of this wisdom and sensibility and kindness all at once. He was really, truly very special.
And that's the kind of person that I think people need as role models. We don't need the movie star stuff. We need people
please.
That have really quality of character, that walk the walk and are accountable, which your dad was. And that is something that with you, he said, you have to be accountable. You're responsible for what you've done. And
absolutely.
You are responsible for the results. So what are you going to do about it? And wow, can you imagine the shift that would change if more people had that kind of an attitude?
Well, and you know, that's really at the core of what I'm trying to convey in the book. It's a notion of self-responsibility and making decisions. And I found, frankly, later in life, when I became an adult and encountered other adults in personal and professional relationships who really were not taught how to make decisions. They had gotten by on default. And so I'm a mother of a 15-year-old. And so I really am always trying to make my son understand the consequences of his decisions, not to make it ominous and scary, but to encourage him to be conscious and thoughtful and own and have a sense of accountability for the big things, like where you're going to go to college and what do you want to be in life, and the little things like cleaning up your room and taking care of the dog.
Right, and having integrity with other people and understanding
Absolutely.
That if you say you're going to do something, you're going to do it, whether it's baking brownies for the local church or whatever it is, you've got to stay true to it and having integrity. And
right.
that is something, again, that is something we learn. That is something that we need to have as an example. And that's what I liked about your book, because these are things that had such a profound influence on you that have enabled you as a woman today to really be very, very successful. You've dealt on a global level. You're dealing on a national level. You're right. comfortable in either arena. And it's always a learning curve, but you've established these precepts in your life that you say, I will teach you how to do this. This is really what's worked for me, and that's what your book is about. Now, let's talk about charting territory.
Sure.
And all of this is about setting up a map for yourself. And I can imagine so many of the people that might be listening today that either are in a career or maybe they've been laid off. We are living in very tenuous times when it comes to a working environment. But it also is time for opportunity. How do you think differently? What can you do to put yourself out there so that you let people know that you're a viable asset? I was talking with a young man just this past weekend. For 3 years, he's been looking for work. And he's in the state of California, and he is having a heck of a time. He said, I want to do my work, and he loves computers. He's just, that's his passion. So he is in an environment that will have a tough time because there's not really that much available right at this moment, wherever mm-hmm. he is at this time. And so he's just sort of stuck. Let's talk about uncharted waters, what we can do, how we go forward.
Sure. Well, you know, I'll tell you a story maybe that really sort of illustrates the mapping process that I've outlined in my book. Recently, just in the last 2 weeks, I met with a man who has probably 15 to 18 years of financial services experience. I'll be more specific, real estate experience mm-hmm. in the commercial mm-hmm. realm. And he had just gotten laid off, and it took him a little bit by surprise, but he had started thinking about looking because his portfolio was shrinking, and he kind of wanted to do something else. So I said, well, have you read my book? And he said, no, I haven't. And I said, this is what it's about. It's about identifying the industries, the functions, the roles, the competencies that you've done historically, plotting all that out, and then looking forward aspirationally at some areas of your choosing. He said, I don't have time for that. I said, okay, well, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go out there, and you're going to start just talking to any and everybody, and you're going to talk about all the different things that you've done, and you're just going to hand people your resume, and you're going to say, so tell me what you think. And when people did that to me when I was an executive recruiter, I would look at them and say, what do you want me to think? I said, so you're going to be spinning your wheels for quite some time, I hate to tell you, but this is exactly what you're going to do because you've not chosen anything. And you might think that it's quite a luxury and impractical of me to even suggest that you can choose certain companies and certain roles in these economic times, but I'm convinced that if you don't, you are at the mercy of the market, and you are going to allow yourself to be pushed into anything just to get food, right, mm-hmm. just to get mm-hmm. Money, mm-hmm. and that can set you back. Here's someone who has an MBA and a JD. Now, so there's no reason for him. Now, I understand that there's a sense of urgency. He has young children. I get all of that. But the whole thing should be, if you envision a target, you're going for the bullseye. And people swim around in the outer circles of the target thinking that they're being effective with their time, and they never really identify what's in that bullseye that they want. They leave it up to serendipity. And so that's why I'm very committed to helping people understand that they've got to make some conscious choices. So in the case of this man, he said, well, you know, but that's all I've known and that's all I've done for the last however many years. And I said, what did you love when you were 10 years old? What did you want to be? He said, well, I wanted to be I can't be a Major League Baseball player anymore. I said, but, gee, last time I checked, Major League Baseball is a business. And it's played on what? Land, which is real estate. Seems to me there are some things that you could extrapolate from there. Real estate is an industry and it's a function. You need to think outside of the real estate industry into possibly a real estate function. And that can be a facilities role in a different kind of an organization. But you need to go do your homework, go online, don't apply for stuff right away. Look at job descriptions and get a sense for the kinds of roles that are out there. And then do the analysis, the gap analysis, comparing your competencies to those of these roles. And now you can start identifying some specific companies in those industries, in those sectors, and now you have a map that you can operate from.
What was his response to that?
He was confounded. And I don't think he just didn't want to do it because he looked at me and he said, when does something just come to me?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why would you want that? Why would you want something to just come to you? I said, to me, that sounds like that's your ego talking. This isn't about your ego being stroked and you being thinking that you're wonderful because you have a JD and MBA. This is about you needing to really leverage. It's about time after all these years now, you need to get some focus and some direction for yourself and leverage all this stuff appropriately and stop thinking that somebody's going to come, a little angel or a little fairy's going to come and tap you on the head and say, we think you're wonderful. Because, oh, by the way, you've not been doing a whole lot to get yourself known and visible. And we had had a conversation 4 years earlier where he said, what can I do? And I told him, write articles, go to conferences. And I said, you didn't do any of those things. So why would you think somebody would know? And why would you want to even be given something? Because it's not of your choosing. So he left, and I haven't talked to him the last couple of weeks. I think he needed to go process that. But I'm hoping that one or two of the things we talked about gave him some clarity and some focus and calmed him and got him at least in a position to start making some choices.
I like your questions that you encourage people to ask and mm-hmm. setting a target. It's a question like, what do I really want, at least at this stage of my life? Because every phase of life is different. I was talking
That's
with a
right.
woman earlier who is, interestingly enough, involved in the real estate market, and she is working on a computer with a company that's out of Florida, and she's happy as a clam. She just loves what she does.
Beautiful.
And then you ask the question, and this is a woman who's in her 60s. She just
that's
is
great.
Thrilled. She said, I've got the best of everything. She's happy as she can be. The question, are you well suited to perform the role that you want? Are you willing to do what it'll take to get you into the role? To be proactive in deciding what you want, not just reacting to what's out there. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. You must pursue multiple opportunities at the same time.
That's
and that's
right.
very important. Don't compare yourself to others ever. Oh, my goodness, is that a big one? Is that,
that is
a
big, isn't it?
Big one? Because mm-hmm. so many times you look at someone and say, oh, my goodness, oh, my. That person, oh, my goodness. I don't have this, I don't have that, I don't have the other. They have all of this. It couldn't possibly be interested in me. Baloney. You never know.
Right. That's
and
right.
to know your strengths. That, I think, is so important, who you are and where you're planning to go. So you've got some wonderful things here, but let's talk about the personal geography. Mm-hmm. Because you go into this, and so many times people say, I don't know how to evaluate myself. We will dumb ourselves down.
Yeah.
We won't give ourselves credit for things. It may be someone has been working as a housewife, and that's how they'll title themselves, and they forget that if they've done things efficiently, if they've managed the bills, if they've managed their stuff at home, preparing meals, taking care of the kids, doing all this, that mm-hmm. is organizational capacity.
That's
and
exactly
you can
right.
take that wherever you go.
Yeah. Yeah, and so at the core of, if you look at the building blocks, the main one is competencies. And those are what I call the portable skills that you take from everything that you've ever done into the next activity or job. So that's what's allowed me to change careers 5 times in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was able to say, you know, I don't think I want to be a college recruiter anymore. I'm going to go to business school and I'm going to become a banker. I don't think I want banking. I want to go into commercial real estate. I don't think I want to do that after 10 years. I want to be an executive recruiter. And then, I think I want to be an entrepreneur. So it's really those things that you have to be able to tell somebody. It's like I was telling this gentleman, you know, don't expect to just hand over your resume and say, here, tell me what you think I should do. They don't know. They have no idea what you should do. They're waiting for you to tell them what you're the best at.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't care if you have been at home taking care of the kids. You've got certain skills. You've got attention to detail. You can handle multiple tasks at once. You might have been volunteering. You might have been the treasurer in your church, and you're good with personal finance. There's so many little aspects in your entire life. So look for clues, not just in jobs. And for young people that might not have a lot of job experience, what did you do in high school? You know, I was a bad girl. You look at all the internships, the activities, the extracurricular things that you did for clues to say, gee, you know, maybe I can work in, I always love sports, maybe I want to work for Nike or an athletic company. And maybe it's retail, maybe it's not. But there are a million different industries that you can select, but you have to identify some of the competencies for the specific roles that you want to go into.
Now, what if someone is, they have a high school education, they don't have a college education, they've got a lot of work background behind them, and when they're interviewing, how do they keep out of their head the fact that it's not a negative, that their working experience can really prove to be an asset? I've known a number of people who have looked at hiring people, and they said what they're interested in is the person's dependability. Are they willing to learn? Many times they want people that do not necessarily have extreme degrees. It all depends on the professional environment. But many times they say, I want somebody that's going to learn. I want somebody that's trainable, is adaptable, is flexible.
That's right.
Because they're coming into this. I wouldn't care if they had worked for Microsoft. That's fine. But we got a whole different agenda than Microsoft. Am I wrong in what I'm saying?
Not at all. No. There's so many considerations to what makes for a good employee, and it starts with that person having confidence and not making excuses for their past. You know, I talk a lot about, closing gaps, and maybe it's that you really do. I mean, statistically, you can make more money the more education you have. Let's put that out there. So everybody should attempt to get college educated, because that is going to give you a higher standard of living. You can command a greater salary. Now, having said that, I know plenty of people who didn't finish college and are quite successful professionally. They might have had to have started a little bit, you know, at a lower level, but you keep pushing and you demonstrate that willingness. And because at some point, if you're, call it 45, it doesn't matter anymore. You've got a rich work experience to fall back on, and you should never, ever be made to feel less than because you don't have that going back. There could be a lot of legitimate reasons why it didn't happen in your life. So don't let that hold you back. Rely on those competencies that you do have. Learn to articulate them really carefully, and then move forward thoughtfully with a rationale for why you want to move into certain industries, into certain functions, and certain roles.
Let's talk about image, because this is so significant. You talk about it, a personal brand. And I think of some individuals, when I was on my business trip, I was observing certain people, and I was looking at a young man who was wearing jeans down around, you know, his hips, and he, literally, you know, down around the butt, I guess I should say. And I looked at this, and I thought, wait a minute, this young man is going to have a heck of a time with anybody because he's not been taught, and I'm not saying you're supposed to be a robot, but his brand, if he were to come in to someone like me and say this is, and if he came in dressed like that, and I've known situations where people have gone to interviews like that, and they say, hey, just take me or leave me. Well, guess what? We're going to leave you. Thank you very much. This isn't what we want. Why is that so important, and why is it so hard to get that through people's heads?
Well, we've got sort of countervailing forces here because, you know, we've become so casual in our attire in the workplace. That disappoints me, frankly. I love fashion, and I love people who are put together. So, you know, you go out to Silicon Valley, and people are in flip-flops and polo shirts, and they're making billions of dollars, and that's great for them. But when it comes to getting a job, you need to really present yourself as though you care. It's a matter of self-pride and respect. You know, it's kind of like going to church. You used to dress up. Well, there should be some times when you actually do dress up and you put on some slacks. If you can't afford a suit, some slacks and a sport coat, or at least a nice shirt, and do the best you can. Polish your shoes. You know, have some pride in how you look. Unless you're going to be a hip-hop rapper, you got no business walking around in jeans around your hips. You know, it's disrespectful of a more formal work environment, in my opinion. So you really do need to look the part, and it doesn't have to mean that you cost a lot. It doesn't mean that you're a sellout. It means you have pride and confidence in how you look, and that you are willing to be a positive representative for that company, for that employer.
I agree. It's so very important. Now, you also have a segment on picking your crew.
Yeah.
And these are people that you know in your journey of life. And building relationships, boy, that's a big one. I'm telling
it sure
you,
is.
That is huge. The adage,
yeah,
make sure you treat people well on your way to the top, because if you should find yourself sliding down to the bottom, you're going to meet those same people coming down to the bottom, and you better be thoughtful, because you treat them like dirt, and it's
right.
going to come to haunt you. And
it
does. I mean, it's just amazing. So let's talk about that for about a minute here. How
sure.
do we define our network? Who can we include? Because the job market is a real strange one right now.
It really is. And let me say, I think the networking piece is one of the other critical building blocks. Once you know all those competency things, you've identified some of these companies that you think you might want to work for, you don't sit around and just send off emails. You've got to get out there and start telling people what it is that you're looking for and asking people for input.
Mm-hmm.
That's what networking means, but it also requires that you will have built relationships. You can't network without relationships. I had somebody on LinkedIn send me a note and say, we have a lot in common, call me. Like, why would I do that? I don't even know. You're not telling me anything as to why I would want to even pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he was actually kind of nosing around for some coaching. So I had a conversation, but I was rather abrupt with him. He didn't understand the fine points of reciprocity. You don't always network to ask for something. You
mm-hmm.
really don't. But
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, once you develop this network of people and you have managed your relationships thoughtfully, this is part of what you're using to gain access into certain opportunities. And I list in the book 8 different kinds of people who need to be in your network. I'll tell you a couple of them if you like.
Yes, go ahead.
A couple of those categories. One I call advisors, mentors, and sponsors. That's one group of people. And so these are the folks that you probably work with. They may or may not be in your organization, but these are people that are generally more senior than you, who have worked with you in some capacity and can really speak to some of your professional capabilities. Another important one is coworkers. Just talking to, and you have to be judicious when you're talking to coworkers about what some of your interests might be, but at least former coworkers who, again, can attest, they were probably peers, but they can attest to the quality of the work, your work ethic, just your behavior outside. When I was a recruiter, I would always reference people, and I would say, what else can you tell me about this individual? You know, is there anything else you think I should know? And what I meant was, it was sort of understood. Does this person have good sort of personal habits? Do they have integrity? Did you know them outside of the office? So you need people who can speak to those things. References is yet another segment. So some of these people that I'm describing might be references for you, but you have to ask them before you can put them in the reference category. And these are folks that can be senior, more senior than you, have been peers, or have been subordinates. And again, can talk to your managerial capability, can talk to, you know, all these different aspects of how you work and the kind of person that you are. So that's just a few of the people. And well, here's another big one. The social media is, you know, linking in with people, whether it's on Facebook or LinkedIn, critical to reaching the masses. And again, you can even combine that with your alumni networks, because those different schools and universities have, and even high schools, certainly on Facebook, have networks within LinkedIn and within Facebook that you can contact people on. So there's no excuse to not be in touch with people for purposes of networking and helping find your next opportunity.
You never know, and I know we're just about out of time, Jenny, and I wanted to just mention, I had an experience with a young man who took 2 hours to drive in 30 miles. The traffic congestion in Los Angeles was so bad,
yes,
it took that long for him to get in to see me. And there was just this wonderful rapport, and we had this conversation, And it was something that allowed me to see him, number one, face to face. And number two, it showed me that this was a person that absolutely wasn't going to gain anything. He
right.
had just, he had been a guest on my show, we had had a wonderful interaction, and he knew I was down in his area, and he said, I really want to meet you. And that was wonderful. But there
yeah.
was something else that happened with that. And what happened with it, there was a communication factor that within 1 hour of time, which was all the time that I was able to share with him, there was this wonderful connection. And there was a sense of trust. And I think that is the biggest thing in connection with people. It's a sense
That's
of trust.
That's right. That's right.
And that
it
trust,
really is.
Because variables can go on, but that trust is priceless. Absolutely
it's
priceless.
So true.
Jenny, your book is marvelous, Career Mapping, Charting Your Course in the New World of Work. Your associate, Echo Garrett, that helped you put it together. I think you're to be complimented on this. I'm so delighted that even though you've had a very busy schedule, you've just arrived in Texas, that you were able to take this time with us. What's your website that people can go to find out more about you and your services?
The website is mycareermapping.com.
Mycareermapping.com. Well, Jenny, I wish you the best. I know that
Anna,
you are
you.
Going to enjoy success on multiple levels and just keep on doing, because I really think your book, Career Mapping, is a wonderful resource for someone to utilize. And I thank you so much again for being a guest on my show.
Thanks for having me. I'm really honored.
This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget, check out mycareermapping.com. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And if you'd like to call in and chat with me today, the telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And it's so good to be back in the Pacific Northwest. I want to thank all of the wonderful people in California that I interacted with, the radio stations that I had the opportunity to interact with. It's just absolutely marvelous. No matter where you go, you're going to meet nice people. And that is the case whenever I travel. I find that there are a lot of thoughtful, very considerate people and people that have fabulous, fabulous stories to tell. And in the coming shows, I'll share some of those stories that were shared with me on this trip. Meanwhile, I want to let you know that if you want to call in, you can, 888-627-6008. For a free reading on the air. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about money. Ted Hunter is going to be my guest, And this is a man who is very wealthy in his own right, but boy, oh boy, his book, Money Smart, is so down to earth and so basic. And he said that anybody, no matter who you are, you can have financial success. And he said, don't buy into the idea that you've got to do some fancy cartwheels to be able to become financially independent. He said, even in the economy today, we are going to have a very, very successful result. So I wanted to share that with you. And, of course, on Friday then, we're going to be talking about soul writing with Joanne DiMaggio. And I think you are going to enjoy these people as well. And then, my goodness, before we blink, we're going to be into October. Holy Moses. Are you seeing all those Halloween costumes out there? Man, oh, man, when I was down in Los Angeles, gigantic banners on huge buildings. Time to look at your Halloween costumes. I even saw kids out dressed in their Halloween paraphernalia. We haven't even gotten through September yet. Amazing. Well, I wanted to share a story with you about a young man who is only 14 years of age. His name is Austin Pierce, and he lives in Arizona. This is a young man that decided he was going to make a difference in people's lives, and so frequently we wonder if we have that chance, if we have that opportunity. Well, with Austin, he didn't wait for somebody to second-guess him. He did it on his own. Now, at a very young age, he got involved with gardening. He really liked it. And when he was 10, he decided he was going to volunteer at a food bank, and his family was very supportive of that. And he began pretty quickly, this is a sharp kid, to realize that a lot of the vegetables that were being sold were just not as fresh as they should be. And he thought to himself, seems like it would make more sense to have fruits and vegetables grown locally so that they're going to be fresher. Well, here in the year 2011, do you know that this young man supplies food for more than 200 needy families? That's right. He took on a project. And what he did, this is amazing to me, he lobbied the city of Maricopa, Arizona, for a community garden. Within months after he had done it, there was a farmer that said, hey, I'll give you an acre of land that you can use, and I'll also provide the irrigation. So he found somebody that was interested in supporting his concept. So the next thing that came up, he needed to find someone to help him because he wasn't all that, you know, he wasn't that old. He was just a little bit over 10. Show him how he could set up the plots for growing vegetables to get the best results out of what he was wanting to do. So a lot of people decided they were interested in helping this young man. And from March to July, everybody pitched in. They were growing tomatoes, cucumbers, okra, whatever else they had of interest. And they have harvested more than 7,000 pounds of donated produce within their first year. And Pierce, who is 14 now, said, wouldn't this be great in more cities? Why should we just be doing it in Arizona? Isn't it wonderful when you have a youngster that says, let's keep it simple. What can we do? And then working with adults, finds out that he has help. People are there to help him achieve what he wants to accomplish. And the result is over 7,000 pounds of food. That's a lot of food, and it's fresh. Well, I'll tell you what. I think if you're interested in checking it out, let me see if I have some contact information here on this young man. No, I don't. I don't have a website that they, you know. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I do. Excuse me. Let me correct myself. If you're interested in finding out about what this young man's been doing, go to formaricopa.org, formaricopa.org, and you can find out all of the information about how he put it together. See, one person can make a phenomenal difference. And when we look at our lives. And we may say, gee, I'm not very important, I don't have very much money. Pierce didn't have very much money, but he had an idea. He had a concept. And I think that that's what we need to keep in mind. Also, he didn't hesitate to open his mouth and say, I want to do such and such. That, I think, is one of the hardest things for us to learn, especially if you've been taught where you're not supposed to ask for anything, or gee whiz, if you talk too much, nobody's going to take you seriously. But if you're really sincere about what you want to do, and it can happen in multiple levels, you have to open your mouth. People cannot read your mind. And that is something that's been really a tough one for me to learn through the years. The adage, don't ask, if you don't ask, you don't get, is really true. You have to be out there. You have to be willing to tell people about your concept and be willing to start an action. And he did. He kept talking and talking and talking until someone said, the farmer, well, I guess if this kid's serious enough, what's 1 acre to me? I have a lot of other acreage. I'll give him an acre so he has irrigation and everything else, and let's see what this kid's going to do. And it worked. That can happen in many levels of life. So whether you're looking for a job or you're in other circumstances, just pull yourself up by the bootstraps and say, okay, maybe I have to do something differently, but I'm still going to do it. I'm still going to try. Donna Sebo here. Whoops. Excuse me. Something got into my throat. We're going to take a break for just a minute. When we come back, I'm going to share a story with you about a woman who is changing a lot of what's done in Africa. And all of us know the horrific genocides that have gone on and the wars that are still going on today. One woman decided she was going to take action. Her story is a very profound one. I'm going to share that with you when we come back. Don't go away. More good things to come.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Get yourself a pad of paper and a pen. I've got a fabulous recipe for you that is really good. But I wanted to share a quote. And this quote reads, each day of your life, as soon as you open your eyes in the morning, you can square away for a happy and successful day. It's the mood and purpose at the inception of each day that are the important facts in charting your course for the day. We can always square away for a fresh start no matter what the past has been. It's today that is the paramount problem. Yesterday is but history. George Matthew Adams wrote that years ago, and I think the wisdom is quite profound. Well, before I go into sharing the story about Lema Gbawi, I think that there is this marvelous recipe that you will really, really enjoy. And it is one that when I found out about it, I said, ooh, I enjoy beef, but often I don't eat it all that often, but I really enjoy something that's deliciously flavorful. And this has some simple ingredients that are great, but that also has a little bit of rosemary to it, et cetera, and it's something that's really, really easy to fix. And, you know, you want to be sure that you just take your time with this, enjoy the preparation, and let it blend in its flavors. In fact, the flavors will marry if, let's say, you prepare it and then have it the next day. It's just wonderful. So what you're going to need is 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 3.5 pounds of beef stewing meat, 3.5 pounds of that. You want it sort of like in 1-inch cubes. You're going to need 1 large onion. That's to be chopped up. 1 bunch of parsley. You want to chop that up. You need 4 cloves of garlic. You want to chop that. 2 bay leaves. 1/4 teaspoon of ground cloves, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of allspice, and 1 cup of Syrah wine, and that's spelled S-Y-R-A-H. You're going to need 2 cups of beef stock, 2 cans of tomatoes, and that would be 15-ounce cans, 1 cup of Kalamata olives. They should be pitted. You can buy them that way. 4 teaspoons of chopped fresh rosemary, or if you don't have the fresh, use 2 teaspoons dry. You're going to need 2 red bell peppers, slice them, and, of course, some salt and pepper that you're going to need. Now, here, this is how simple this recipe is. You want to heat your oil, your 3 tablespoons of olive oil in a large, heavy pan over medium-high heat. Then you add your beef, and you brown it on all sides. You remove the meat from the pan, put it aside, turn your heat down to medium, add the onion, and let that onion just slowly cook and lightly brown. It takes about 10 minutes. Then you stir in the parsley, your garlic, your bay leaves, your cloves, your cinnamon, and your allspice. Mix that quickly. Return the beef to the pan, stirring it well because you want the onion and spice mixture to coat, to coat all the meat. Then you add the wine, the beef stock, and you bring it to a boil, and take a wooden spoon or plastic spoon and any brown bits that are on the bottom of your pan, you want to scrape them so that they're loose, and you want to simmer everything for 15 minutes. Then you add your tomatoes with the juice, break them up with your spoon, mix in your olives and rosemary, reduce your heat to low, put the lid on it, and let it simmer for 1.5 hours, and you just stir it every once in a while. And then you add, after 1.5 hours, you add your red peppers. Let that simmer for about 20 minutes. And then season it with a little bit of salt and pepper, and you can serve it with polenta or rice or potatoes and a nice wine. And it is just absolutely wonderful. Wine adds something very special to dishes, and this is something that I think you will enjoy. Anyway, I wanted to share that recipe with you. That had come across my desk, and I thought it was awesome. In fact, Troy and Cheryl Lynn Townsend had designed that recipe. So, again, I wanted to share that with you. By the way, give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-627-6008. Lema Jibawi, I said Gibawi, but it might be Jibawi, is a woman whose picture is in front of me right at this moment, and I am telling you, I am so impressed with what this woman has accomplished. To me, she is a modern-day woman who has withstood tremendous and horrific circumstances in Africa, and she is a woman that has a passion for peace. And I hope one day I'll be able to have her as a guest on my show because I think that her story is just utterly phenomenal. But I wanted to share a little bit of it with you because she was a woman that saw people murdered right in front of her, people that she knew, members of her own family. She fled with her relatives from Liberia. She had wanted to go to college, wanted to become a pediatrician. She was getting an education. But she said in 1989, everything was taken away. Literally, everything. She returned to Liberia in 1991, And she saw such horrific devastation that it just made her numb. She just couldn't believe the horror that she came back home to. And she ended up getting involved and married to a man who was extremely abusive. She ended up having more than one child. And then she decided, that's it. I'm getting out of this. Her education stepped in and assisted her in her thinking to realize that she didn't have to stay in this mess, and a dream was born. And that dream was to create peace. And it needed to be a movement of women. And she made it happen. Now, there was a person by the name of Taylor, who was the president of the country, and a civil war was going on that was just awful. So she started organizing women. She actually persuaded Christian and Muslim women to unite. Now, you'd think they'd be in opposing fields. She was amazing at how she was able to bring people together. There was one meeting where she said all of the women that were in there, some of them were educated, some of them weren't, and there were all of these comments being made, and she said, okay, I want you to write down on a piece of paper your title, who you are, write on what you've got. She then had a box, and she had everybody put those pieces of paper that they'd written things on about themselves in. She put them in the box. She closed the box's lid, and she said, your titles, your degrees, your position, your religion, none of this matters. What matters is that we are women. Women who have been raped, our families murdered, our children terrified, and we live in fear, and we need to unite for peace. Her stories of what went on, it's just, they're just horrific. And, of course, I don't have the time to share any of that with you. But she said, it was my job to make a difference. And she said, because of our group of women, we were able to force the president, Taylor, to resign. And the first woman president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Africa's first female president, was elected in 2005. And she said, it's so important that women understand the valuable roles that they play. And I think that her story is a powerful one. And like I said, I'm only giving you a few tidbits of this woman and what she has been able to accomplish. But she was able to get people to put aside whatever they felt was, quote-unquote, their personal identity. There was no class system in here. There was nothing. All of their lives had been horribly affected, and she said, we have to unite for the right reasons. And I've got a picture in front of me of Liberian women demanding an end to their country's civil war. These women did it peacefully. They did it together. And I would say that, well, Lema Jibawi has started something that I believe is going to grow, because it's going to grow around the world. And that's something we need to remember. We need to remember that we do make a difference. One voice plus another voice plus another voice. That is what can create change. But sometimes we have to get rid of our smallness, our stuff, to get the bigger picture, and to work together as a team, no matter how you want to look at it. It's amazing. People assisting people and working together for a bigger picture that's going to create a better world of harmony. It's quite special. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow, we are talking money. I do hope that you will join us. Take care. God bless. Talk with you manana. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.